Okay, let's try and unpack this. Picture it. You're home, maybe in flip-flops, comfy pants, expecting a pizza delivery. There's a knock. You open the door, and bam, it's not pizza, it's a killer. Actually dressed as a delivery guy, gun out.
Wow, straight into it.
Yeah, that's how this whole thing kicks off. Right there in the doorway, it's messy, immediate blood everywhere. And the sources say the first cops on scene, well, they actually disturbed things a bit.
It's a really brutal, disorienting start, isn't it? And that single moment, that violence crashing into what looks like a totally normal life, that's the trigger for this whole deep dive. We've got this pile of material here, notes, articles, personal accounts, basically a hidden world jammed into these pages, all stemming from this one shocking event.
So our job today is to sift through all this, pull out the important bits, and try to piece together what's really going on based on these sources.
Exactly. And right from the start, we meet the key players. First, the victim, Arlo Echevarria. His death is kind of the inciting incident.
Explosion, yeah.
And then there's Logan. He's the guy whose perspective we get a lot of this through. His link to Arlo is complicated, deep, but also, tangled.
And his current life, which seems pretty quiet, maybe a little downbeat, is about to get totally flipped upside down by Arlo's past secrets.
So we'll structure this by first looking at who Arlo Echevarria really was
Right.
beneath the surface. Then we'll follow the investigation, the official police one, and Logan's own kind of unofficial digging.
Okay.
And as we do that, we'll see how all these seemingly separate threads start weaving together into this pretty dangerous picture.
Yeah.
Hidden past, present threats, all of it.
So by the end of this, you listening should have a really clear understanding of this complex story with all the sort of weird, memorable details these sources throw up. Ready to jump in.
Let's do it. Starting with Arlo Echevarria himself. The sources paint this really striking, almost contradictory picture.
House.
Well, on one side, you've got the public face. The LA Times funeral notice, for example. It describes him very conventionally. Born Oakland 61, SF State business degree, ran an international marketing company, retired early to LA.
Sounds pretty standard successful guy stuff.
Totally. Active in charities, devoted wife Savannah, son Micah, who apparently worshipped him. It even has this line about him setting off to see the Lord to receive the angel wings he deserved for so long.
Angel wings, okay. But contrast that with how he was actually found.
Exactly. The sources say, face down, unresponsive, inside the entryway, smearing blood across the oak parquet floor. And what was he wearing?
Flip-flops and Costco lounge pants.
Right. The angelic farewell versus the brutal, messy reality in his everyday clothes. That contract alone, right there in the sources, tells you there was way more to Arlo than people knew.
So what was the other side?
That public life, it was just a cover. His real career, according to these documents, was working for the government. He was part of this highly classified unit, codename Alpha.
Alpha. And what did Alpha do? It wasn't like policy papers.
No, not exactly. Their job was direct, lethal. The sources say they hunted terrorists together and usually killed them.
Okay. Definitely not filing expense reports. Is there an example?
Yeah, a pretty chilling one. A Syrian pharmacist from Damascus, described as the mastermind of at least four jihadist bombings, killed over 80 people. But he had political connections through marriage.
So tricky situation for the government.
Right. The president's people didn't want a public fuss. So the order came down, encrypted, make the evil pharmacist disappear. Alpha took care of it, made him disappear.
Wow. And they kept their identity secret.
Completely. The sources mentioned they used aliases in the field. This wasn't just for missions, it was structural. To bury their real lives, their real names, everything was classified, off the books.
And Logan, how does he fit into the secret alpha world?
He was in Alpha with Arlo. They operated together in that world, but their relationship is knotted. Logan says Arlo saved his life once in the field. Huge debt there. But Logan also says Arlo stole his wife's, Savannah, had an affair with her while Logan was with her, and then married her. So you've got this intense mix, life-saving obligation and deep personal betrayal.
That's heavy. And what's Logan doing now, according to these sources? It sounds like a total shift.
It really is. The contrast is jarring. He's 43, divorced, lives in a converted garage apartment in Rancho Bonita.
Rancho Bonita. Okay. What's his life like there?
Sounds, well, grounded. Maybe a bit bleak, like you said. He owes money for hangar space to some guy named Larry. His business is Above the Clouds Aviation.
Flying lessons.
Yeah, giving lessons in this old Cessna 172 he calls the ruptured duck. The sources mention unreliable radios and hail damage. So not exactly a booming enterprise.
Making ends meet how?
Government pension, maybe one student paying for lessons. It sounds tight.
Yeah.
Lives in this small, stark white garage. Gingham curtains.
Any companions?
A cat named Kittyit, who apparently has the IQ of a houseplant and is picky about food.
Mm.
And his landlady, Mrs. Shmilovitz. She brings him dinner. They watch football. It's this quiet, struggling existence.
And that's the life that's about to get slammed by Arlo's secret past.
Exactly. Arlo's murder rips the lid off everything.
So Arlo's dead. The cops don't know about Alpha. Savannah does. And she goes to Logan.
Right. Because he's one of the very few people who knows about Arlo's hidden life. Mm. But Alpha, she believes the cops can't solve it without knowing the truth.
So now we've got two tracks. The official LAPD investigation and Logan's search, kind of pushed by Savannah.
Precisely. And the sources introduced the LAPD detectives, Keith Zarnik and Windhauser. Their first move, bring Logan in. Treat him like a suspect.
What are they like? The detectives?
They have distinct personalities described. Zarnik is more measured, pear-shaped, push-broom mustache. Windhauser sounds intense, aggressive, vein pulsing in his forehead when he gets worked up.
Yikes. Okay. So they need Logan's alibi for the murder night.
And his alibi is wonderfully mundane, detailed in the sources.
Hmm.
Involves his landlady, Mrs. Shmulowitz.
Of course.
It was Monday Night Football. She forgot dessert. Sent Logan out at halftime to Kang's Portola Street Market.
Love these details. What did he buy?
Vanilla ice cream, apple pie, and 6 cans of fancy feast cat food. Logan tells the cops Kang, the owner, is a huge Oakland Raider fan, and we'll definitely remember him being there.
I see.
He does. But Windhauser's still skeptical. You know, maybe Logan tongued it right. But when they go to Kang's, Kang confirms it, remembers the Raider fan, and then he gets really angry at Windhauser for pushing him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tells him something like, I'm Korean-American now. Get the fuck out of my store, chief. So the alibi sticks. Windhauser's clearly not happy about it.
Okay. Logan's cleared, but the case isn't closed. Then who steps in?
Gil Carlisle. Savannah's father, described as a rich oil tycoon. Smooth Texas drawl. Guess what he wants? Either with charm or, you know, lawyers.
And what does he want from Logan?
He says he wants Logan to talk to the police more, help Savannah find closure. But he offers more than just encouragement.
Money.
A lot of money. $25,000. Wired from the Bank of Bimini, no less. With one big condition. Savannah cannot know he paid Logan.
Wow. Okay. Does Logan take it, given his situation?
He does. Despite feeling conflicted, the sources mention his debt to Larry, the hangar fees. Hmm. He takes the money. And that really shifts his role. He's not just helping reluctantly now. He's being paid to investigate.
Which probably puts him on a different path.
Immediately. Carlisle's money sends him flying literally to El Molino for a meeting. The sources describe this little cafe at the airport there.
Who's at the meeting?
Carlisle, obviously. His associate, a guy named Lamont Royale, and this other man, Pavel Tarasov. He's described as an independent oil broker, Russian.
Okay, interesting mix. What are they talking about?
Logan overhears bits. It's about a huge business deal, specifically Kazakhstan oil fields.
Kazakhstan, okay, that sounds big, international. A leap from a murder in L.A.
Exactly. This is where the story starts to really widen out. Suddenly, Arlo's death seems potentially linked to international finance, maybe even geopolitics.
So Logan now has Carlisle's money and this clue about Tarasov in Kazakhstan. What's his next move?
He reaches out to his old network, contacts Buzz, another ex-Alpha guy.
Still in the game.
Not officially, but he runs what Logan calls the Buzz Intelligence Agency, basically his own network of contacts. Logan asks him to check out Pavel Tarasov.
And does Buzz find anything?
Oh, yeah. Some really interesting stuff. Tarasov pops up in intel cables. He's known as a self-made tycoon, international playboy, and significantly a suspected asset with peripheral ties to Russia's foreign intelligence service.
Whoa, SVR ties? Okay.
But here's the kicker, the direct link back to Arlo. Buzz finds out Arlo Echeverria was actively researching Pavel Tarasov in official government files shortly before he was murdered.
No way. Arlo was digging into Tarasov.
Seems like it. And this connects perfectly with something else Logan finds. He does this trash dive at Arlo and Savannah's house, the one they were selling.
What does he find in the trash?
A Turkish Airlines ticket stub shows Arlo flew to Atiro, Kazakhstan, just days before he died.
Atiro, Kazakhstan. Where is that exactly?
The sources point out it's right near the Kashagan oil fields, the very same ones Carlisle and Tarasov were discussing at that El Molino meeting.
Okay, hold on. So Arlo is researching Tarasov, who has suspected Russian intel ties. Then Arlo flies to Kazakhstan, near the oil fields Tarasov and Carlisle want to develop. Days later, Arlo's murdered.
Bingo. All of these pieces, Arlo's death, Tarasov, the research, the trip, the oil deal, they suddenly click together.
This is getting way bigger than a simple robbery gone wrong.
Much bigger. Mm. And as Logan starts connecting these dots, asking questions, the pressure ramps up. The sources mention this specific vehicle showing up.
What kind of vehicle?
A small white two-door Honda. Tinted windows, spoiler, it starts tailing Logan. He spots it after his first police interview, has to shake it off.
And it's not just him.
No. Savannah reports seeing a similar car outside her house, too. Someone is definitely watching them. And it feels directly tied to whatever Logan's uncovering.
Just watching. Or does it escalate?
It escalates. Violently. The sources detail an arson attack. Logan's garage apartment in Rancho Bonita. It gets firebombed.
Whoa. Seriously. Any leads?
Yeah. Well, the local cop investigating, Detective Kyle Ostrow, described as younger, more laid back, gets witness reports. Neighbors saw a white Honda, matching the description, near the garage just before the fire.
The same car.
Seems like it. There's also this side detail about the media showing up, Chip and Heather and Logan, making them apologize to Mrs. Schmulewicz for stepping on her flowers during the fire scene chaos.
Gotta protect the flowers. But Mrs. Schmulewicz, how does she react to her garage being burned down?
According to the sources, she's remarkably positive, says there's a reason for everything, and plans to rebuild it bigger and better for Logan.
Good old Mrs. Schmulewicz. But the fire must have consequences for Logan beyond losing his place.
It does. Big ones. The feds pull his pilot's license after the incident, which, considering flying lessons were his main gig.
Right. That basically wipes out his income, pushes him further into that debt we talked about.
Exactly. And meanwhile, the body count, or at least the suspicious circumstances count, keeps growing. Buzz calls Logan again.
More bad news.
Yeah. About Robbie Emerson, another former Alpha guy, found dead in Arizona. Local police ruled it a suicide. Gunshot. Left a note. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Another Alpha member dead. What's Emerson's story?
He was forced out of Alpha years ago. Failed a polygraph about contact with a potential foreign asset, some Bulgarian woman involved in arms deals.
Mm.
Arlo, interestingly, had defended him back then.
Mm. And what was Emerson doing recently?
Despite supposedly having secret money stashed away, he was working part-time at a Home Depot in Phoenix.
A Home Depot. Okay. Does Logan buy the suicide ruling?
He goes to see Emerson's widow, Emma. And she absolutely does not buy it. She's convinced Robbie was murdered, blames the government, the Russians, says the cops were scared.
How does she seem reliable?
The sources describe her as pretty paranoid. Her house is filled with banker boxes, hoarding papers. She has a news chopper is spying on her. It's a lot.
But does she offer anything concrete?
One weird detail. She mentions a faceless man buying a Sawzall at the Home Depot where Robbie worked, using a stolen Amex card the day before Robbie died. The police dismissed it.
A faceless man buying a Sawzall. Strange. Does Logan connect this to anything?
He starts thinking. Emma's paranoia about Russians, Robbie warning Arlo about Russians. He wonders if maybe Tarasov's people had something on Robbie from his Alpha days, maybe related to that Bulgarian woman, and used it to force him into something, then killed him, making it look like suicide.
It's a theory. It definitely suggests their pasts were still haunting them. Any other disappearances?
Yes. Logan finds out Gennady Bondarenko is missing. He's the owner of that dive bar, Jingle's Happy Place. Logan learns this from Anya Bondarenko. The sources aren't clear if she's his sister or wife.
Yeah.
But Gennady's gone. Another piece of the puzzle. Another potential victim.
Man, this is sprawling. So before we get the big reveal, did they rule anyone else out? The sources mention a few others.
Right. They touch on Arlo's son, Micah. Hated his dad. Apparently wrote some angry YouTube poem. His polygraph was inconclusive, but Logan didn't think he was the killer type.
Okay. Who else?
Arlo's ex-wife, Janice Ramos. Also hated him, but she was out of the country. Then there's the neighbor, Marvis Woodley, the fake Navy SEAL guy.
Oh, yeah. Him. Oh, what was his contribution?
He claimed he saw the killer and identified him as a local junkie, Nicholas Sulak.
And was it Sulak?
Nope. Solid alibi. Sulak was locked up in Wasco State Prison miles away on the night of the murder. So Woodley's ID was totally wrong. Dead end.
Okay, so after all these threads, theories, dead ends, who actually did it? Who killed Arlo?
The breakthrough comes from Detective Zarnik.
Mm-hmm.
He sits Logan down and lays it out. The killer is Lamont Royale.
Wait, Lamont Royale?
Yeah.
Gil Carlisle's associate, the guy Logan met at the El Molino Cafe.
The very same one. Zarnik confirms Royale killed Arlo Echevarria and Gennady Bondarenko, the missing bar owner. And adding insult to injury, Royale was the one who shot Logan.
How did they finally nail him? What was the evidence?
They found the guns. A Glock .40 used on Arlo, Bondarenko, and Logan. Ballistics matched. They also found a 4-5 used in another murder, a math teacher named Benjamin Ortiz.
Another murder? Where did they find these guns?
This is wild. They found them stashed in the garage of a guy named Smith. Smith lives at 5442 Elmira Avenue, same house number as Arlo, 5442 Williston Drive. Just different street.
That's bizarrely specific. What else?
They found the Domino's delivery shirt Royale wore for Arlo's murder, and witnesses eventually identified him.
What about the witness description issue? Dark-complected versus white?
Sarnik explains that. Royale is biracial, so depending on lighting or angle, witnesses saw him differently. Sarnik apparently quips two for the price of one.
Okay, so Royale was the trigger man, but why? What was the motive?
It all leads back to Pavel Tarasov and that Kazakhstan oil deal. Tarasov hired Royale.
Why kill Arlo?
Because Arlo was investigating Tarasov. Quietly, for Gil Carlisle. Tarasov found out and panicked. Feared Arlo would expose something, maybe his Russian intel links, maybe something else that would kill the huge oil deal.
And Bondarenko, the bar owner.
Tarasov had apparently tried to get Bondarenko to invest in the deal. Bondarenko said no, and maybe overheard too much or became suspicious. So Royale eliminated him too.
And Carlisle, Tarasov was working with him.
The sources state Tarasov planned to kill Carlisle too. But after the deal was signed and sealed, Royale was basically Tarasov's cleanup crew, his enforcer.
So Royale is caught. Problem solved. Or are there loose ends?
Oh, definitely loose ends. Big ones. Remember that white Honda?
Yeah, the one tailing Logan seen at the firebombing.
They figure out who owns it. Miles Zambelli, Carlisle's smug executive assistant. Buzz dug up the DMV records.
Zambelli, so he was driving it. Was he involved in the killings?
He was definitely involved in the aftermath. Zambelli was the one who shot at Logan in Smith's garage, the place with the same house number.
He shot Logan?
He was there trying to retrieve the evidence Royale had stupidly stashed the guns, the Domino shirt. Logan stumbled upon him. Logan only survived because of his old Alpha firearms training from some guy named Laz.
So Zambelli was covering for Royale? Or was he deeper in with Tarasov?
The sources leave his exact motive a little murky. Was he just Carlisle's loyal aide cleaning up a mess tied to his boss's associate? Or part of Tarasov's plan all along? We know he was nosy, knew about Kazakhstan, said he and Carlisle had no secrets. But his main actions were owning the car, hiding evidence, and shooting Logan.
So Royale's caught, but Zambelli's actions are known. What's the status now?
In the immediate aftermath described in these notes, Royale is in custody. But Zarnik tells Logan they're still actively looking at the bigger picture. That means Tarasov, Zambelli, maybe even Janice Ramos' husband Harry, who gets a mention. The investigation isn't over.
And Logan's situation?
Still rough. Pilot's license still suspended, still owes Larry money. His only income noted is from one student, Eugen Dragomir.
And the threat, is it gone now that Royale's caught and Zambelli's identified?
That's the really unsettling part. The sources end this section with Logan seeing that white Honda again. Still tailing him, even after everything.
So even with Royale arrested and Zambelli's role exposed, someone is still watching Logan in that same car. Chilling.
It really leaves you hanging. But amidst all that danger, there is that little flicker of hope from Mrs. Schmulwitz. She's rebuilding the garage bigger and better, plans for a real kitchen, a jacuzzi for Logan, even a cat jungle gym for Kittyit. She wants them back. A small piece of stability trying to reassert itself.
So looking back at this whole deep dive based on these sources, it's incredible how one murder just unspools everything. A seemingly random doorstep killing explodes into secret government ops, billion-dollar international oil deals, multiple connected deaths, and this web of dangerous people all tied back to Arlo Echevarria.
Yeah, the material really hammers home how your past can catch up, you know? Oh. The high price of living secret lives. And how these different worlds, black ops, global finance, local crime, can just bleed into each other in terrifying ways.
And for you, listening, what's the takeaway here? Maybe it's just how little we can ever truly know about the layers beneath the surface of people's lives.
Huh.
Or maybe it's how these huge, complex, global things, oil deals, foreign intelligence, can suddenly land right on your doorstep, even if you're just wearing flip-flops waiting for that pizza.
Those specific details really stick, don't they? The Domino's outfit, the alibi with the ice cream and cat food, the whole two for the price of one biracial killer explanation, and that persistent damn white Honda.
Okay, so here's a final thought. Based only on what these sources tell us, Lamont Royale, the shooter, is caught. But Pavel Tarasov, the guy who hired him and planned to kill Carlisle too, seems to still be out there. Miles Zambelli owned the car, hid the evidence, shot at Logan. His full allegiance isn't totally clear.
And then there's that final sighting of the white Honda, even after Zambelli's known. Could the danger still be active? who else might have been involved or known too much about that Kazakhstan deal or about Arlo's investigation, the sources leave that door wide open.